This is the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Representative Eric Sorensen, new member of the House Ag Committee from Illinois. And that's in a moment. First off, Barry Worsham, CEO, Cotton Incorporated.
One of the things that I've always said, this more uncertainty in the marketplace today, whether you're talking about demand, you're talking about, you know, what the needs are, what may grow in terms of importance. And it's really important for an organization like ours to not only have a sort of a budget to deal with some of these things, but to have the ability to be flexible. If situation changes, we need more emphasis over here or something is different. We've got to have the adaptability for that. And so far that's worked pretty well. When we've needed extra resources, the Cotton Board's been very helpful for us there. And they also have been helpful in terms of understanding where sometimes we may have to underspend the budget to go with more resources somewhere else.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by the Honorable Eric Sorensen, who represents the 17th Congressional District of Illinois. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tony, for having me.
Hey, it's great to see you. By the way, welcome to Congress.
Yeah. This is a crazy place. This is where we get all the work done. So I'm excited.
So did you really ever dream that you would be a congressional member at some point in your life?
No, to think about the fact that, you know, of everybody who's ever been able to call themselves an American, not just the 300 and some million that we have today, there have only been 12,000 that have ever been elected to do this job. And so for me, it's deeply personal because I represent the district of Western Illinois where I was born and raised. You know, this is the place where I grew up. You know, I only wanted to aspire to be the weatherman on TV, and I got to do that in my hometown in the neighboring TV market from Rockford, Illinois to Moline, Illinois, and I did that for 20 years. And, you know, for me, it was waking up early. Who was watching at 4:30 in the morning? And this was agriculture, right? You know, it's the home of John Deere. And for me to actually connect my community with the science that was needed, it was a great place to be. But if I could have told my younger self that there's something even greater than your one dream, I'm living it today.
But it just goes to show you that there are opportunities to pivot along the way, and those experiences that we have from the past really prepare us for the future. Would you agree?
Right, right. And I think for me, it's knowing who I serve. Right, it's knowing why I'm here. I'm here for the people of the district. I don't work for anybody in Washington, D.C. You know, I work for the farm families. I work for the descendants of John Deere from 1844, who decided, you know, John Deere, when he moved from Grand Detour to Moline, Illinois, which was called Milltown at the time, to be able to build a factory, to build plows. And look where we are today. Look at what precision agriculture does for our family farmers today, and how are we incentivizing not only the innovation and technology of ag, but, you know, how are we getting our kids and our grandkids to understand their place in ag, but then also as a congressman, it's making sure that we're going to meet the needs so that they do have the ability to make it big in ag.
Member of the House Ag Committee, mm-hmm. So let's stay in the district for a moment. Let's talk current conditions.
Right.
Maybe not a forecast, but what are we seeing right now? Dry conditions?
Right. So my job was a meteorologist before this. So it's understanding the impact of weather and extreme weather to agriculture. So important here. We just got done with a very late season snow melt in the upper Mississippi, caused a pretty significant flood on the upper Mississippi. That has gone away, but the difference between this year and 2019, for instance, was that late season melt off from the snow happened as we were getting into the rainy season, and so that was the worst, you know, combination we could have. Now the problem that we have is we didn't get the rainy season. Where is it? You know, farmers have been great to be able to plant, get seed in the ground, but now we're way behind schedule. So this is really going to affect our yields if we don't start getting these recurring patterns of rain. It does look long term. Talking with folks at NOAA and the Climate Prediction Center, which goes out 8 to 14 days, that we're going to change things a little bit.
Well, and you've hit on drought and flooding, obviously trying to do a little to help here.
Right.
What's happening here in Congress?
Well, here in Congress, it's working on in the Agriculture Committee on the Farm Bill. I am a proponent of making sure that we utilize E15 all year round to bring the costs down. When we look at, especially coming out of the pandemic, how hard it was for American families to make ends meet, we got to bring the cost of fuel down. And so I am a proponent of that. But it's also working with stakeholders for sustainable aviation fuel. For instance, in my district, I've got the second largest UPS air sorting hub outside of Louisville. I've got the fifth largest Amazon air. They want to spend money. They want to spend money to meet their climate goals. But here's the thing is we got to provide them with the biofuels. And so who are going to be the heroes in this? It's going to be our family farmers, the ones that are going to produce for the biofuels that we're going to need for that next generation. I got O'Hare Airport as well. And so when I go to a farm, and farmers are like, wait a minute, our weatherman's now working for us to make sure that we're going to be sustainable into the future. It's a win-win, not just for the district, but for the people I represent.
I'm so glad you brought up aviation fuels. That seems to be something Department of Energy and Secretary Granholm is really pushing. Mm-hmm. Despite some of the other concerns about electric vehicles here and there, right. She's very clear to say, hey, we've got to have this. It's a huge market. Can your district, are you in a position really to start providing that?
Right. We had an agriculture roundtable in our office a couple of weeks ago now. So we put the stakeholders around the table. I am cognizant of the fact that, if you don't have a seat at the table, you're probably on the menu. Right. So I want to make sure that we've got as many stakeholders and farmers at the table in ag to understand, all right, how do we advocate? How do we best solve these problems? And one of the things that I look at is sustainable aviation fuel. Well, look at the number of planes that are flying today compared to just 10, 20 years ago. It's gone up significantly. And these big corporations have set their own climate goals. Well, we have the ability to actually help them meet it. But also, these big corporations have set aside funds. And so those funds are going to come right back into our smaller communities. And not only does it help the farmer, but it helps the mom-and-pop shop in Chadwick, Illinois. It helps the bank that I bank at in Monmouth, Illinois. It is far-reaching by making this investment in agriculture.
Okay, you talk about rural communities, yeah. But we have a digital divide.
Right.
In other words, rural broadband is lacking. Is that on your radar?
Yeah, I mean it's something that that I've fought for. We brought Secretary Xochitl Torres to the district to be able to unveil funding for rural broadband. And what we've got to make sure that we do is that the rural broadband just doesn't go between point A and point B. It's got to hit all of the folks that are surrounding this straight line. Okay, so it's going to be more difficult. It's going to take more precision from the level of the representative to make sure that we're doing this the right way. But look, I mean, we're coming through a pandemic. It's not just that kids had to, parents had to drive their kids to Aledo, Illinois, so they could pick up the Wi-Fi at McDonald's. But also it means if we really want precision ag to work for our benefit, we've got to make sure that we've got good connection out on the farm.
So good to see you. Will you come back and see us down the road?
Absolutely.
Again,
my pleasure.
It's the Honorable Eric Sorensen, representing the 17th Congressional District of Illinois. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Andrew Brandt is with the U.S. Grains Council. He talks about telling the real story of sustainability when it comes to U.S. ag.
We would, you know, point out that biotechnology is a big tool in the toolbox of more sustainable crops in the future. So, you know, there are certain activist groups that don't like certain crop protection chemicals. What they never do is explain what the alternative is. You know, you want to go full organic, you're going to pull out all the old cultivators. John Deere and Case are going to have to start making them again. And what do we, you know, when you till that soil, you're releasing carbon into the air. You're also getting erosion and runoff. So biotechnology is a major piece of no-till, also just crop protection in general. And that's one of the points we've made, not only in Mexico, but also as we go around the world. But sustainability certainly is a big issue here, and one of the ways we've been doing one of the we just launched a new program. Officially, it's called Sustainable Corn Exports. But what we do is have the ability to issue a record of sustainability with an export shipment of U.S. corn. So there are kind of two pieces of that. One, we have the actual record of sustainability, which is an electronic document that can kind of follow this corn through the supply chain, even if it's processed overseas. We have the ability to break it down into smaller pieces in the co-products. That way, this record of sustainability can follow that grain all the way through the supply chain and be used by companies that want to be able to source verify their ingredients. The other piece of it, and what that record of sustainability represents, is what we call the Corn Sustainability Assurance Protocol, which is a document that basically outlines how U.S. corn farmers are growing corn. You know, a lot of people around the world don't know that in order to be eligible for crop insurance or Title I, your land has to be in what's called conservation compliance under the Farm Bill. They also aren't aware of all the gains we made in the efficiency of U.S. corn production over, the last 30 years, as well as some of the laws that prohibit certain practices. So that's the document that outlines all of that. So when that customer overseas gets its record of sustainability, it has kind of the explanation document with it. So if they're ever hit up by someone on where their ingredients are coming from, they have an electronic verified digital copy of the record of sustainability and then this explanation document that goes with it. We just launched that in February, so we're still kind of getting it off the ground. But as you see around the world, not only are there potentially government policies that require this type of compliance, but there's also consumer demand for it, and this is our effort to you know, start to come in compliance with that, make sure the U.S. corn farmers are positioned to satisfy the need of the marketplace and potentially government regulators if need be. And so we're very excited about it and looking forward to continuing to see how that program expands.
That's Andrew Brandt with the U.S. Grains Council. And this is the Agribusiness Report.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Where is the beef industry heading? Find out firsthand October 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Gaylord Texan Resort in Grapevine. It's Texas Cattle Feeders Association's annual convention featuring John Foley, a former Blue Angels pilot, and mentalist and illusionist Wayne Hoffman. The 2023 TCFA annual convention in Grapevine. Learn more online, tcfa.org. Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest, Illinois Representative Eric Sorensen, a new member of the House Ag Committee. can hear more of our interviews with members of the House Ag Committee online at allagnews.com.
Supporting the High Plains cotton producer is the number one priority for Plains cotton growers. Since its inception in 1956, PCG has focused on being the advocate for High Plains cotton and a respected voice on cotton issues. Protecting the interest of the High Plains cotton producer requires a dependable, dedicated organization focused on getting results, and cotton producers depend on the organization they founded, Plains Cotton Growers. From the halls of Congress to the turn rows of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report.
This fiscal year, the U.S. has sold bulk commodities worth over $53 billion.
Down 12% from this time last year.
USDA economist Bart Ketter says the only major bulk commodity showing a sales value increase is soybeans, up 4% from a year ago. However, actual tonnage of soybean sales down a little bit, down 3%. Here's what's going on with beans.
Our top two export destinations are China and the EU for soybeans. And those destinations are up in volume. We're up 13% over last year to China, up 2% over last year to the EU. But then the next five countries, Mexico, Japan, Indonesia, Taiwan, and Egypt, are all declines in volume terms from last year.
Again, leaving soybean sales volumes down 3%, which is a small decline given the over 30% drop in corn exports and the 20% decline in overall bulk commodity shipments. Gary Crawford, Washington.